Welcome to Reality Student Ministries, and thanks for listening. We are all about learning how to live this life to the fullest, getting the most out of every day. For information on upcoming events, sermon series, and ways to connect, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com, as well as like our Facebook page at RSM. Now here's today's message.
With that, we are going to finish our series tonight of Can I Ask That? Right? We have been going on for the past several weeks. We've been doing this whole series on Can I Ask That? With this premise of, guess what? Everyone in life has questions. Everyone in life has some things that they think through, whether they're silly questions, like, you know, can God make a burrito so big that he can't eat it, right? Or whether it's serious questions of you know, I have some doubts. Why would God allow some things like this to happen? I just don't understand. Whatever it might be, we all have questions. And the premise of this whole series is this, that doubt is not toxic to faith, but silence is. And so whether you have those questions or you know people that might have those questions, our whole thing is this, that we don't want you just to keep silent, and we don't want you just to try to figure it out on your own, but we want you to bring it to us. We want you to ask us, you know, we want you to, because this is a safe place to ask those things, because doubt, those questions aren't a bad thing. Sometimes we beat ourselves up because, oh, I'm a bad person for even thinking this. I'm, you know, I've been in church all my life. How could I even ask this? But that's not the issue. The issue is, you know, I don't want you to just try to pent it up on the inside and try to figure it out on your own, because God didn't design you to do that. He wants to help. He put us here so that we could do life together. And I'll be honest, the support staff here, we don't have all the answers. And often, we wrestle with the exact same questions that you guys do. But we want to come alongside you. And so, man, we've done it over the past 6 weeks. We've talked about questions of hey, is it okay to doubt God? And we looked at doubting Thomas and looked at that whole issue of hey, you know, how, when we doubt, when we do question God, what are appropriate ways of doing it? Of asking the right people, of asking for an answer, not just for an argument's sake. And then we looked at, hey, is hell real? And if hell's real, which we determined it is, based upon everything, all the evidence in Scripture, and even in the world that points towards a knowledge of hell, if hell is real, then why would a loving, caring God send someone there? And we talked about that. And the fact of the matter is, the question I would pose back is, why would a loving, caring God force somebody who wanted nothing to do with him their entire life here on earth, force them to now be with him for eternity? I feel like that would be hell as well. And so we get into the issue of free will, and God allows us to choose a way that's not in a relationship with him. And so hell is real. And then the third week we discussed why bad things happen to good people, and the realization that bad things happen to everybody, not just good people, but bad things do happen to good people. And often we looked at the whole walking on the water and the disciples in the boat, and we see that the disciples just followed Jesus's commands, and it led them into a storm. And often in our life, just by obeying Jesus, we can be drawn into some storms, right? And so the question is, are you willing to go into the storms, even if, or are you willing to obey Jesus, even if that means you're going to go into the storms? Because in those storms, you can see they're miraculous. In those storms, you have an opportunity to see Jesus like no one else has ever seen him, to experience Jesus like Peter did, like no one else had ever experienced before, to know firsthand that Jesus would be there to help you do the miraculous, to do the impossible. And then the fourth week, Rachel actually talked about the power of why we worship, and realizing that our worship is based out of this whole idea of a covenant, and why do we lift our hands, and goes through this whole step-by-step thing. And so, man, that was amazing. And then last week we talked about this idea of the question, can we do something so bad that God won't forgive? And we talked about how often we as humans rank sin, right? How I had jury duty last week, and I was like, oh man, this is gonna be intense, because we as jurors got to say whether he's guilty or not, and he ended up pleading guilty before we even got to that point. But we as a world system rank sin, okay? Like, I got a ticket, I got fined. You murder somebody, you go to prison. Death penalty, death row kind of thing, right? And so, but in God's eyes, we see that God sees all sin the same. And he's kind of like a person that's allergic to peanuts. And we talked about how there's a warning on things that are even manufactured in peanut factories, because even some traces of peanuts can send people into like horrible allergic reactions where their throat like closes and everything, to where God has that same allergic reaction to sin. And even the hint of sin, he has to be away from it. And so we see that Jesus is that antidote, that Jesus saves us from that, and that when we accept Christ, he takes our sin as far as the east is from the west. And we talked about the unforgivable sin, and we looked at what happens with that and what that means. And it's not just this one-time flip it, well, I just don't think I'm going to follow God anymore, I don't believe in him, but it's a lifelong pursuit totally against God. It's a lifelong blasphemy saying, I don't want anything to do with it because it might be true, but I am going to deny its truth to the bitter end, to my very last breath. I am going to deny Jesus. I'm going to deny the power of God. I'm going to deny anything and everything and never claim it to my dying breath. It's not this one time, oh, I think I'm going to do it. It's a constant, persistent, calculated denial and rejection of Christ. And so if you've missed any of those, man, I encourage you, or if you have friends or family that might be helpful to hear some of those talks on, I encourage you, get online, reality.painesvilleag.com, and listen, and they'll be uploaded by the end of this week. So this week, we're finishing this series with this question. Why is it so awkward to talk about Jesus to my friends? Like, you ever feel that way? Like, man, it is just super awkward, because there's basically like two things that we all fall into when we see somebody like talking about Jesus. There's two categories people fall into, mainly, for me at least, and it's this. Either like they're freaks, and I don't want to do that. Like everyone's talking about how horrible they are and how annoying they are, and see, I see what a bad witness they are, and they're like on the tables be like, come to Jesus, right? And they're just like freaks. It's like, dude, you're hurting the church more than helping. Like, what the heck is wrong with you? So that's that category. Or the other category, when we actually see people talking about Jesus, is this. It's like, man, like, how can they do that? How do they have the guts to do that? I could never do that. Like, their words, like, all come out, like, the same, and it's great. And when I try to talk, I'm like, hi, my name is Donnie. Whew, man, that was hard, right? Like, sometimes you try to talk to people, and it's like, this is just super awkward, super awkward. I can't get past this. And so there's kind of two categories, either the really cool guy that we all wish we were or the really freak guy that we hope we aren't. And so because of that, we kind of stay away from that. Now, I was a nerd in high school and kind of a jerk in college, and so I didn't talk to a lot of people. But one guy, the cool guy, cool Christian, super Christian guy, came up to me and said in high school, said, hey, Donnie, we're going to get together, a couple other guys, and we're going to meet on Friday mornings before school, and we're going to start kind of doing a Bible study at McDonald's. I'm like, oh, sweet, cool. It was really kind of dorky because my mom had to drop me off, like, at this guy, at, like, a place on the highway, and this guy would pick me up from the place because I couldn't drive, even though I was a junior in high school. And it was really awkward because he had to pick me up for my mom just so I could love Jesus. And I was like, ah, all right. But then I finally got a car and I could drive, and it was awesome. But all of a sudden, I got together with these guys. I was like, this is so cool. And we got together, and we started coming up with this game plan. And we came up with a hit list. It was a hit list of people, of guys that we were saying, hey, we need to get these guys here. We need to get these guys connected and get them here to like understand who God is and who God's called them to be. And we came up with this hit list, and it was awesome, like all these guys. And I started looking at this hit list, and I realized these are like guys way out of my league, and like they're super cool. They're like, everyone likes them. They're the guys that are really big partiers, and I'm just a dork that does Star Wars. Like, there's no way I could ever talk to these guys. So all of a sudden, I realized I can't talk to those guys. And so I let the super cool Christian guys go talk to them. And sure enough, you know, we kept marking them off as those guys would bring them and say, hey, you need to come. And we were talking about Jesus. And they were like, yeah, I really do need God. And so it was really cool. And what's funny is I actually went to a Christian high school. And people think, oh, you went to a Christian high school, that means everyone's there is a Christian. No, that means all the parents send their kids there hoping that they will get saved. So we have like the worst of the worst. They're like, oh my gosh, I can't handle this in public school. Here, get saved. We'll put you in Christian school. And so we had like a bunch of people that were crazy that were there. So all of a sudden I realized that, man, I'm really not good at talking to people about Jesus, at sharing a testimony that I have. And I always felt this way. I was like, I don't have anything cool. And this is how bad it got. I got to a point where I was like, God, would you let me, for just one semester, go off and do all sorts of horrible, horrible things that I could feel like I could get then saved from, and then have a chance to talk and witness about, yeah, I was in jail, I did drugs, I shot somebody. Like, God, could you just let me do something really bad, and just so that I could have a cool testimony? Because I feel like there's no way that I could ever talk to anybody about Jesus because I don't have anything cool to say. And so it was at that moment that I realized that God was kind of like, Donnie, you don't need to be hit by a Mack truck to know that it's going to hurt. Likewise, Jesus didn't have to go through and do horrible, horrible things to say, hey, I understand what you're going through. Jesus was able to still relate to people. And I realized that I don't have to rely on a ace in the hole kind of card of my testimony of saying, this is it, look at me, I was a horrible person and now I'm saved. But I need to relate not about me, but about Jesus. Because my whole testimony, I just thought, hey, it's all about me, but it's not. It's all about Jesus. And so the reason that we feel awkward sometimes, and the reason that we shy away from this is because society says that we shouldn't force our beliefs on others, and so all of a sudden we feel like if we even mention it, that, oh man, that means that we're forcing it, and so we shy away from that because we're playing to, guess what, we're playing to our emotions, and this is the dangerous part. We are valuing our emotions, our happiness, you know, what our friends say, what people are labeling us. Oh, I don't want to be that freak. I don't want to be that guy. We're valuing our emotions of how is this going to look and all that above the call that Christ has put on us, above the call of Christ that he's given us to say, hey, I've called you to go, right? And so we are valuing our emotions above the call that Christ has given us. And that's why it gets so awkward sometimes to share, is because we put all the emphasis on us and not on him. And so when we try to talk to our friends about Jesus, we think that it has to be something about us, but it doesn't have to be about us. It's all about him. And so in Matthew 28, verse 19, we know that it says, go and make disciples. I mean, it starts off that way. Go and make disciples. It doesn't say go and make people happy. Go and hug the world. Go and make as many friends as you can get. Go and make sure that everyone understands how awesome your fashion is. Go and don't make any waves. Just kind of slide by. And you can be the prayer warrior. That's what we'll call you. You don't have to talk to anyone. You could just say you're going to pray for everyone. And you don't ever have to talk to anyone. It doesn't say that. It says go and make disciples. And disciples is what? It's bringing people into a closer relationship with Jesus, bringing people into a closer walk with God. And see, often as Christians, we wuss out because we know. And some of you guys have grown up in the church, so you know all the phrases. Like, I'm just gonna be the prayer warrior. Like, you go, and I'll just stay here, and I'll just pray. Right? And because we don't want to actually get out. Like, I used to do this thing where there is this teacher that said, hey, I'm going to go carry a cross in downtown Kansas City. And then in downtown, there's a K-State is like the college, one of the colleges nearby. And they have this strip where it's just bars. He's like, hey, I'm going to go carry a cross. And so he took a bunch of high school students, not smart, I'm not sure what he was thinking, to the street full of drunk people at 1 o'clock in the morning, bars everywhere. And I was like, I don't know how to talk to people. And so I just carried he has this giant cross. I was like, I'll carry the cross. I got that. So I'll just carry the cross. And they come up to me, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, and it's really funny. Hey, buddy, you want to explain what we're doing to him? I'm just going to keep walking here. I'll just keep walking. And so all of a sudden I started to wimp out on actually saying, you know, sharing my heart, sharing about who Jesus is. In Ephesians 4, verse 11, this is another way that sometimes we misuse the gospel and God's word is this. It says, and he gave, and Paul's talking about God, and he gave some as apostles and some as prophets and some as evangelists and some as pastors and some as teachers. And then all of a sudden we see that and we're like, that's it. See, I don't have the spiritual gift of evangelism. That means I don't talk to people about Jesus. You get them saved and I'll talk to them later about it, right? Like, oh, isn't God great? Hey, let's lift our hands, right? Like, I don't have the spiritual gift of evangelism. And all of a sudden we use that as a cop-out. And I'm telling you, we need to get past this, because God has called every one of us to go and make disciples, and that means to draw people into a closer relationship with God. There's another thing that, there's this growing strategy that of witnessing that I've been seeing over the past decade, and it's this whole idea of doing only part of what Jesus did, and it's this whole idea, you might have seen it on shirts, and you might have heard it, but this is the thing, is I see this line, and it's love all, serve all. Whew, that's awesome. Because Jesus was what? He was all about loving the unlovable. And so as our witnessing slogan, we are going to love all, serve all. And that's our slogan, is we're going to love the unlovable. And so ultimately, that's a part of what Jesus did. And I'm telling you that, and some of you are like, well, wait a second, I've seen like Hillsong Church do that and all this stuff. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not competing or saying that what churches do is wrong. I'm saying often we use that as the end game for our witnessing, as the end game of talking about Jesus, as the end game of how we show the love of Jesus. But that's not it. And for those churches, it's not it either. They need one more tagline on it, but it doesn't always fit on the shirts, and that's why they don't put it on there. But we need to put a tagline of tell all. Love all, serve all, tell all. Because there's this line that I grew up in, and I've gone on missions trips, and I've shared at youth rallies and in youth groups and at baccalaureates and at all sorts of stuff. I've been preaching this line, and up to probably a year or two ago, I was like, yeah, this is awesome. This is totally awesome. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks that, hey, this is kind of missing the point. And it's this line from, they give credit to St. Francis of Assisi. He might, if he was around, deny that he actually said this based upon the way he lived. But it says this, it says, preach the gospel, if necessary, use words. Preach the gospel, if necessary, use words. And people say, oh, that means that I just need to live this life and I need to serve people. I need to serve people. And yes, that's so true. We do need to serve people. We do need to live a life of servanthood. But it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there. And this pastor said, and it hit me, it goes, he said, it is impossible to preach the gospel without words. It's impossible to preach the gospel without words. And people want to say, no, it's about serving. And we use that as a way of getting out of awkward conversations, right? Hey, I'll go on a missions trip. Oh, great. Could you share your testimony? No, how about I just keep, like, playing with the kids? Like, tic-tac-toe is going awesome right now, right? Like, or we use it as a way of getting out of, oh, could you go pray? Oh, you know, I'm just going to watch and see what happens and what God does. And all of a sudden we're using this way of copping out, of saying, you know what, I just don't want to talk to that person because it's going to be awkward, right? It's going to be awkward. But if we really want to follow through with Christ's example, he did that. He preached the gospel without using words because he lived it. He was always serving. He served everyone. Everywhere he went, he was a servant. But that was just the first part. So here's the second part. Matthew 9, verse 9 through 13. I love this. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth. Now, this guy was not liked. Tax people, tax collectors are not liked. And he said to him, hey, follow me. And Matthew got up and followed him. And as he sat at dinner in the house, many of the tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with him and his disciples. Man, look at that. Jesus is hanging out with sinners, and he's having a meal. He's not like preaching to them. He's just hanging out with them. He's just being there, serving them. Oh, man, this is awesome. I could do that. Right? I could totally do this. I could totally hang out and be that great influence on people. And then this. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he, Jesus, heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have come to call not the righteous, but the sinners." Like, if I was Matthew or the tax collector, I'd be like eating. Yeah, you tell him. Wait, what'd you say? Did you just call me sick? Like, and a sinner? Please, Jesus, come on. What? See, Jesus had no problem calling it what it was. Jesus had no problem. He wasn't like, "Hey, I know they're kind of jacked up right now, but we're working with them, and we're on this kind of like 12-step process with them, so I'm not going to mess this up right now, okay?" No, Jesus said, yeah, they're sick, and they need a physician. Yeah, they're sinners. They got some junk in their trunk, right? Later on in John 8, there's this woman that got caught literally in the act of adultery, thrown out here, and all these leaders were like, "Hey, what should we do?" trying to trap Jesus. And Jesus basically started drawing in the sand and was like, "Hey, whoever has never sinned, go ahead, cast the first stone." And so he just keeps drawing, and then he gets up and he says this. He goes, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" And she said, "No, sir." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you." And we'd love to stop there and be like, "Yeah, man, we shouldn't condemn and we shouldn't judge people. That's great. That's awesome. I could do that. I could just be super nice." But then he says this, "Go your way, and from now on, do not sin again." Oh, he caught me. He knows that I sinned. He knows that obviously, because if she was caught in the act, she didn't have very many clothes on it either. So obviously, all of a sudden, it's this thing that Jesus kind of just called it as it is and was like, "Listen, you got sin. You got some issues in your life. You need a Savior. Listen, I see that you're struggling, that there's some stuff in your life, and you need a Savior. You need a physician." And all of a sudden, we see that Jesus didn't just stop at actions, but he spoke the truth. And we need to be able to see that in the light of our conversations, in the light of our actions. And I'm telling you, what you guys did this summer, for those that went to El Salvador and went to Peru and went to Salvation Army, and those that even did stuff on mission that wasn't even a part of what we were doing as a church or as a student ministry, man, you guys did some incredible things, but it can't just stop at action. It needs to follow through with truth. And that's why even in the Bible, it says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. That we are called to speak life into people. And that you have a lot of people that are surrounding you that need life spoken into them. And I almost see like those awkward conversations like in movies where like the dad, and I hate it when they do this to father figures, because they make dads look like idiots in movies. But like the dad sits down and like the son or the daughter is like, dumps everything. "Oh, I can't believe this." And the dad's just like, "Yeah. Good talk." And it's like we're surrounded by people that, and we do that. We come down and they might not open up to us and be like, "Oh my gosh, you know, I'm dealing with all this stuff. I'm having all these issues." But we know deep down that they are. We know that their family life might be messed up. We know that they might not be living the lifestyle that God desires for them. And yet we sit down next to them and we're like, "So how about those calves?" Right? And we just leave it at that. We don't even look for an inroad into that. We just leave it like, "Oh, I just, it's so awkward. It's so awkward." Why? Because we're basing everything on our emotions. God has called us to be bold. Even says in Matthew that the forceful ones advance the gospel. The forceful ones advance the kingdom of heaven. And I stand here as the accused of saying I'm not always the one that's advancing forcefully God's kingdom. because I shy away from conversations that I should be having. I shy away from speaking truth. And I'm not saying we need to start going around and, like, now that school's starting, going down, saying, sinner, sinner, sinner. You're on the borderline. Sinner, sinner, sinner. You're really hot. Maybe we could go on a date. Sinner, sinner, right? Like, I'm not saying we need to go through our schools and start labeling people that way, but I am saying we need to start seeing the unseen. We need to start seeing and being able to speak life and start to pull upside to those people and start to love on them. And start to share life with them and start to not only love all and serve all, but to tell all. So what's the next step? If we believe that we are serving the God of the impossible and that he's going to do some incredible things in and through us this semester, man, I believe that these next few months of 2015 are going to be incredible. I believe that God is going to do some incredible things in and through you guys. And so how do we get to be a part of that? How do we line up and say, God, I want to be used by you? And the first step is this: commit to praying. Commit to praying. And why is that? Why do I say that? Because prayer, and you've heard me say this a thousand times, prayer helps burden your heart for the things that burdens God's heart. And I love this illustration. I use it all the time. But what does God's heart beat for? It doesn't beat for me. Me. That's a dead heartbeat. It beats for people. People. People, people. And when you start to pray, when you start to commit to praying for people, you start to have that burden for people. You start to have the burden for what God's heart beats for. And so under your chairs, we've done this multiple times, but there's a five-friend focus is what I call it. And we're going to commit this semester. We're actually going to do this multiple times, probably once a month. We are going to bring these sheets so that it's, one, refreshed in your mind, but two, sometimes it's just good for you to start praying for other people as well. But I want you later in the service tonight, I want you to start thinking of five people that you could pray for this first month of school. Five people that you could start praying for that's on your teams, in your neighborhood, at work, at school, that you could start praying for. That God would open up an opportunity that you would start to have a burden for them. Now, don't write it right now. I know I just gave it to you, and you're like, oh, I totally, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to write all this down. It's going to be great, right? The second thing that we need to do, the next step, the second thing is this. Look for opportunities. Look for opportunities. First thing is commit to praying. Second thing is look for opportunities. Look for those opportunities to where we can speak into somebody's life. I want to do an illustration real fast. Can you throw up the next screen? All right, so what do you guys see up there? What is that? Anyone? Anyone? Black dot. Black dot? Black dot. You guys are good. Really good. Black dot. Man, first A of the whole semester. Except for, why is our attention drawn to the smallest thing on that screen? And so often, we get so focused. Oh, I got this person, I'm going to get them saved. I'm going to get them to church. This one person. I'm not saying getting vision and getting passionate about going after somebody is a bad thing. I'm saying, man, like I just said, that five-friend focus, that's a good thing. But so often, we allow that to be our black dot, and that's all we see. And I'm telling you, most of Jesus' miracles, and you look through the Gospels, most of Jesus' miracles and interactions happened not on what he was focused on, but on as he was merely walking past. He was merely walking by, and a woman touched him. He was merely walking down the road, and a blind man found him. He was merely walking through a pool, and he healed somebody. And so all of a sudden, we got to see that, God, what's the white space all around me that I may be missing because I'm so focused on just seeing this black dot? I'm so focused on just this one aspect. God, what is the white space of opportunity that I am surrounded by? But often I don't even see. Because Jesus saw that white space of opportunity everywhere he went. He saw those opportunities because, like I said, most of his miracles happened not based on, hey, I'm going to, guys, guess what? Today I'm going to raise somebody from the dead. Hey, guess what? Today I'm going to go heal somebody from the blind. No, no, he was walking on a mission, doing something, and all of a sudden, there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity to speak life and hope into someone's life and to heal them. And so the third thing, first thing, commit to praying. Second thing, look for opportunities. What's the white space? And third thing is don't stop at action. It's crucial that you love people by action and by serving. It's crucial. That is the very DNA of who we are as Christians should be to serve people. But we can't stop there. Christine Kane said this, I really liked it. It says, leadership is an attitude of service that results in influence. Leadership is an attitude of service that results in influence. So I kind of tweaked it and realized that leadership is an attitude that leads to an action. And that action results with an audience. See, because Jesus called Matthew and said, hey, you should follow me. Hey, let's go do dinner. Hey, let's go hang out at McDonald's together. Because Jesus served them and said, hey, let's go hang out. Let's just chill. He then all of a sudden had an audience. And he made the most of that audience. Because he decided to step in when no one else would step in for this woman to guard her, that she's now been caught in the middle of adultery. When no one else stepped in, he stepped in and served her by addressing her accusers and said, you know what, you don't need to be doing this. But he didn't just do that. He then spoke directly to her and to her life and said, go and sin no more, because he all of a sudden had an audience with her. He all of a sudden had an audience with her because of his action. And so often we do things, but we only stop halfway because we don't realize the audience that we have. We don't realize the impact that we have, the potential that we have. So allow your action to get you the audience with someone, and then speak. Speak the truth. Speak the life. Speak the love into someone's heart. And you need to use your words, because it's not about you. It's awkward, yeah, because your emotions are playing a big role and you're like, I just don't feel like it. I'm afraid. I get that. Your emotions play a big part in it, but it's not about you. It's about God's call on their life. So tonight, we're going to spend some time and we're going to get some music playing here. Brittany, if you can get that going. We're going to spend some time just praying and saying, God, would you give us opportunities? Would we be able to have eyes to see the white space around us? We're going to spend some time, and you guys can spread out, and you guys can write down the names and say, hey, I want to be able to love on people. I want to be able to, you know, God, who are the five names that you've called me to love on? And so why don't you guys go ahead and stand up, take your five-friend focus, and why don't you go ahead and spread throughout the room. And we're going to just spend a couple moments in prayer.
Thanks again for listening to this message from Reality Student Ministries. Our hope is that you've learned a little bit more of who God is and who He has called you to be. For information on how you can get connected to our student ministry, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com or like our Facebook page at RSM. Now get out there and have an incredible day.